Discover Bay Water Wastewater Committee Board to order. And roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken and let the record reflect all members are present with the exception of Water and Wastewater Manager Goldsworthy and District Water Engineer Shove.
Okay, with that, we're going to go to public comments. The public can speak to us on anything that's not on our agenda. There's no public here at the moment. If public does come, I'll go ahead and reopen public comments. With that, we'll go to draft minutes of our last meeting.
I'll make a motion we accept the draft meeting.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
With that, we'll go to presentations of the water wastewater update.
The water wastewater updates incorporated into the discussion items.
Okay. With that, we'll go to E1, staff.
This is item concerns the normally scheduled water wastewater committee meeting to take place on January 1st. That's a holiday, so we're bringing it to the committee to make a motion to cancel that meeting. If we need to bring a meeting during January, we'll do it through a special meeting.
That sounds fair and reasonable. Do I hear a motion to approve?
I make that motion that we do as staff says. Working.
I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we'll go to E2, discussion regarding expenditure of water pipeline replacement.
I'm going to turn that over to our special project manager, Mike Yurok.
So, the saga of the Little Lake Water Line project. So, I think I mentioned before that we have been looking on how to most efficiently repair or replace the water line. If we do the liner option, where we go in and try and line the pipeline, which we could do relatively quickly if we can make sure that we can stop any water from the lake coming into the pipe, because we have to make sure that we can stop the water coming in before the liner can be inserted and expanded and cured. We could do that really with no permitting requirements, because we're not disturbing anything within the lake bed or under the lake bed. That is set up in two phases. Phase one would be at a cost of about $28,500, which would be to go in and clean the pipe, flush the pipe, dewater the pipe, see where the water is coming into the pipe from the lake, to see if we can grout or seal the pipe from the inside. If we're successful in doing that, then we can move on to phase two, which is go ahead and put the liner in and connect both ends, and we're done. The risk there is that we see the water is coming in too quickly. We see the hole is too big, because when Justin spoke with the grout guys that would do grouting of that from the inside, they said, boy, if it's over an inch in size of a hole or a crack or something, the grouting may not work. Justin is looking at some other options for doing a pre-liner, like an inside patch job, point patch. But that option has some risk with it of about $28,500 if phase one doesn't work. The other option is to do a horizontal directional drill, brand new pipe all the way underneath the lake. We go down about 40 feet under the lake bed and come back up the other side. That is the same project cost approximately, about $253,000 sum total. That project, though, will require us to do more extensive CEQA and secure fish and game, or fish and wildlife now, stream bed alteration permit. And most likely, if they respond, Army Corps of Engineers permit processing. And I've actually been talking to Gregory, and he's given me some good ideas, but in any event, so that could be 6 to 9 months of permitting and CEQA before we even can think about starting the project. The concern we've had is, how are we impacted on fire flow in the community because this pipe is out of service? And so Aaron did some great flow testing with Justin's people, and we've determined that in the summertime, max day, people using all the water, we can get about 1,000 gallons a minute out of this area. We had a conference call with the fire department today, actually, and they said, you know, if you can get us 1,000 gallons a minute under the worst case conditions, which is summertime, when the demands are high, we're fine. We can fight a fire. Because we're trying to determine, is this an emergency? If it's an emergency, if we were, say, down to 400 gallons a minute, I'm sure the fire department would have said, you should have fixed that now. And then I told him, I said, if you can tell me this is an emergency and you give me an email saying this is an emergency, I'll take that to Mike and we'll go ahead and ram it through without permits. He said, no, I can't do that. If you can tell me we can get 1,000 gallons a minute, I can't tell you it's an emergency. So we'll try to go the emergency route to bypass the permitting, but we can't not in good faith go that route. So the decision that we need your guidance on is, would you like staff to proceed with option one, which is phase one of making sure we can get in there and do out of the pipe properly and seal it up so we can do the liner at a risk of about $28,500? Because if that doesn't work, we're going to have to go to option two, which is the horizontal directional drilling, which takes a long time for permitting and things like that. So really the risk is the initial $28,500 that we're estimating for phase one of the quicker project, which is to do the wire.
What's the length of this?
It's about, altogether about 300 feet.
And the reason you just can't go and lay a new pipe on the lake bed?
That would be the same project as the horizontal directional drilling. We would have to secure permits from Fish and Game, things of that nature. The pipe would be more secure and safer under the lake bed versus laying it on top. Now we have to set concrete blocks to anchor it down, things like that. It could be hit by an anchor.
There's no motorboats in there.
Yeah,
there's.
Well,
electric.
Mm-hmm. I don't
think they could come an anchor,
which would be
efficient.
Right, but isn't that in between two points?
It is the shortest length across.
Right, so
yes.
It actually sit right there. I don't know what to do. But anyway, be that as it may, is there any cost savings if we thought about this laying on there?
You know, we have considered laying it on there, but we feel that perhaps the complications with that and the risk to the pipe being exposed and having to anchor it to the bottom will most likely be just as costly as doing the horizontal directional drilling.
All right.
So. Can I play devil's advocate here? So we got enough fire flow, and it's been closed off since February. Do we really need to repair it if it's not an emergency?
Well, it doesn't meet the fire flow requirements that the fire department would like to see.
There we go.
They talked about the code and how the code wants 1,500 gallons a minute, which is what the master plan is targeting. And we're saying we can only get you about 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
The worst area is 992 gallons a minute, something like that. So they're saying we can live with that, but the code really requires this 1,500 that we are.
You can't, in my opinion, you can't have your cake and eat it too. If this isn't an emergency to fix, then my feeling is, why are we spending $250,000 to get 400 more gallons of water?
Well, it'll be 800 gallons more of water.
Well, whatever,
but we don't need it.
About 500 gallons a minute of water. Yeah.
How old is the pipe?
What did that plan say? 1950?
About late 60s?
Yeah. Early
so 50 years, 60 years old.
50, 60 years old, yeah.
What caused the break? Do we know?
We feel it's the corrosion on the pipe.
Which means it could happen in multiple places at any given time.
Yes.
The liner would help that. But if
the liner would solve that problem.
Well, it's solid, but how thick is the liner?
The liner is about 4.5 millimeters thick, and it is what's considered a class 4 pipe, which means the outside pipe could corrode all the way, and the liner would still be there, just like a PVC pipe.
So I'm a little confused if that's the case. If the pipe broke completely, the liner could hold it.
Yes, the pipe. Yes.
But if the hole is greater than 1 inch, it's not suitable. So
it's just for the leak before we put the liner in.
But what it would tell me is the thickness of the liner. There's a hole that's larger than 1 inch, size of a quarter, size of a half.
Okay.
They're worried about it bubbling, right?
No.
Why would they worry then about a 1 inch hole?
Okay. We have to stop the water from the lake coming into the pipe before we can put the liner in and expand.
So it's a fear as we install the liner.
Exactly. Because the liner will not work if we still have, we can have a little bit of water coming into the pipe, that's okay. But if water is gushing in, the liner curing process will not work.
What's the life expectancy of the liner?
I think about like 75 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Just like PVC pipe.
Okay.
Yes, and one thing we're gonna be coming back to the board with on the recommendation is for all the rest of the undercrossings is to authorize staff to go forward with cathodic protection on the rest of the steel pipe so we don't have this happen on the other side.
So my concern would be, I'm sorry, my concern would be that we have what was the length again?
About 300 feet.
30 feet?
300 feet long.
300. I was gonna say 30 feet, that's a lot for 30 feet. 300 feet that is suspect because we already have degradation. 60 years old, I don't know what the original lifespan of the pipes are, but 60 years is present any pipe.
75 years is typical.
Even PVC gets a little brittle at that point. So I think the need to ensure that we don't have some catastrophic failure in the future is, and it could just burst. A big chunk could take.
Are you talking about the one that's broken now? It's out of service. We cannot put it back
right now, but the intent is to get it back into service.
By either a brand new pipe or the liner.
So we can say it's off now, but we're gonna put it back in service.
Well, that's a decision information I just received, but I've got questions about. And the only
reason, question.
I know, the only reason that we need to put it back in service is to gain 500 gallons of water for the fire department. But the fire department says, it's out of service now, it's good enough for us.
Well, I don't know that they're saying it's good enough for us.
Well, it's good enough because they won't declare it an emergency.
Okay, that's...
And if you can't declare it an emergency, then when is emergency? Because it's already shut off.
Or you go back and say, if you don't declare an emergency, the choice could be that we do not repair it.
Well, they aren't going to say it's an emergency because they've already ruled on it.
I know that, but if they know it's not going to be done, they might look at it differently.
Before you say that, there is one thing also to consider is if we have another break elsewhere within the system of another pipe, because this one is out of service, now you have two pipes out of service, you will find yourself in an emergency situation.
Perfect, and we get to fix it right away. Bingo. No problem. So I would rather spend $250,000 that we're thinking about and go to the other pipe and get those projects going. Line those, do whatever, fix all the rest of them while we're waiting for the emergency to happen. Save ourselves $250,000. There's no hurry to get one pipe fixed.
We don't save it, but we have other pipes.
We get to reallocate the funds.
That's right.
And ensure that the rest of the system, I don't know if 250 would fix all the rest of them, but
no,
at least
it won't,
but it gives us enough capital at this particular time while we don't have an emergency to explore all those other pipe and get a handle on what's it going to cost us to fix everything.
Right, we are actually having an asset management meeting on the 19th.
Yes.
Right, to talk about things exactly like that.
Mm-hmm. I'm not comfortable spending this.
Where would the funds come from? That's the question you were waiting, hoping somebody would ask.
Yeah.
do we have funds available to?
We do. We would. We would use reserves. Or we could use our infrastructure replacement funds.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But it does pinch a little bit.
Very good. Sorry, I cut you off.
I was just going to point out that the systems, that's what you said, the systems are designed to be redundant to some extent.
Right.
So once you reuse one lane and you say, okay, we're going to live with it, then you can set yourself up for a real emergency later and you do something else and then you don't have significant flow in certain areas. So I think long term, you need to think how you repair this pipe, you know.
And that was going to be.
We can always come back and fix this pipe at a later date. In other words, what I'm looking at is trying to prevent that second pipe, wherever it is, under that lake,
right.
All of a sudden it comes up, and now we got two of them we got to fix right away.
Right.
If we go ahead and say, okay, this is offline, not causing us a problem right now, fire department's happy with it, let's go double check all those right now, and kind of get a game plan going, and then we can take the worst case scenario, fix those, get it all done, and then come back at whatever date and connect this line.
I think, are the other pipes you're thinking about the other underwater crossing?
Yeah, whatever
okay.
You mentioned. Yeah.
What I'm talking about is another pipe in the road.
Any place.
Anywhere other than those underwater crossings that are scattered throughout the town. It's the other pipes that are in the roadway, that if one of those break, for example, you have an earthquake, gas line break, fire start, water line breaks. Now you have active fires happening, and now you have little or no water flow because the water line broke as well during the earthquake, and we didn't repair the Willow Lake water line. And now we have an emergency situation where they need the water to fight the fire, and we don't have it. That's the risk you run by not repairing this pipe.
Well, redundancy is how this thing was designed, so Gregory makes a great point. And if we ignore this and move to something else, we could have a multiple failure. If one of the others failed, even as you're doing that, now we've got two down. I think as you have a problem of this nature, fix the problem. Pick a choice, you know, option one, option two, or come up with a third or fourth, but fix it. Fix it. Because something else will go wrong and we're getting money elsewhere. It seems like a lot of money, I know it, but you lose. We are down, and it's not hurting us, but we are marginal. If something else goes down, then we're below marginal.
Yes.
And now we're in a scramble. So even though we can get things through an emergency, it's still going to take time to fix it.
Let me ask you a question. In an emergency situation, how long does it take to fix the pipe? So let's just say there's an emergency situation, and now we have two down. One's in the street, one's on a water crossing. How long does it take to fix those pipes? Now, granted that we don't have enough fire flow if there wasn't
under
fire.
Under emergency action, 6 weeks?
We're fixing pipe on Beaver Lane.
No, this is, you have to order high-density polyethylene pipe. You have to get it delivered. You have to fuse it together. You have to set up the boring pit to bore underneath the lake. You have to do
that. Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the street
one. Yes, the street one. I agree with you. The street one I could fix overnight.
Right.
Right. No, but to answer her question, for this pipe, you have to get the contractor mobilized. Okay. All right.
I understand the complexity of boring. Yeah. But I'm just, let's just say, frustrated that the fire department feels everything is just fine.
Well,
but.
No, I think someone said marginal.
Yeah.
I think marginal is a better word for how the fire department feels. I don't think they didn't say they're just fine. I think marginal is the correct word.
I have a question. If it's an emergency, is it a different? I think it we get a fast track on the permitting, and is there a cost savings there too, or is it
yes.
an emergency?
Both.
There is, yes, both. Right. But you have to look at
save time and money.
You have to be, it has to be a real emergency because they're going to, if they investigate, it's Mike's signature on the permit, on the notification, not mine.
I don't look good in prison stripes. So what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to move to the board, this issue's coming before the board tonight. And there was two options, but there may be a third option, and that is, don't address it at this time. Take the funds we would utilize to do that and use it to protect the other lines under, put it to a better purpose than this at this point. So we can do that and you can raise your issue on the board
and I understand the worst case scenario. Earthquake, gas line broke, we've got San Mateo going on and whose shoulders is that?
and there's one more thing to consider is that the insurance ISO, they establish insurance rates for the area, and they'll come out and actually, I don't know if you've had this before, but they'll flow test fire hydrants, and if they're not 1,500 gallons a minute or not what the code requires, then people's insurance rates could go up potentially. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
You're giving, and I appreciate your professional advice. You're giving us. Again, you have to look at worst case every time we're dealing with public infrastructure, which is extremely frustrating. At this particular point, if there isn't three votes to cut it off and say, forget it, wait for another day, my option is going to the ground, take whatever time it takes because you get a brand new pipe and the pipe with more capacity.
I think, yes, we could, if we went that route.
And we don't risk spending $28,000 to find out we can't do it at one present.
Exactly, and that's the kind of decision we need from the board, is do you want to risk that money and get it done quicker, or not risk the money, take our time, and get it done the second time?
Well, I think it's an easy choice. You've we've got to, and the liner sounds very, very appealing, but it's still going inside of a 60-year-old pipe.
Well, it can go through. You got to.
But let's say it goes through, it's still going in, and we're going to have others. And to say the pipe will survive on its own, I find that hard to believe. If you have a big chunk just collapse on your crumble.
It does not need the old pipe to survive. It's all, once it cures, it's done.
If that's the case, I'd like to look at that more deeper, because if that's the case, there's no reason to put a new pipe in and go through
the here's the reason.
I know they're the same cost.
But if you can't, if you've got to spend $28,000 before you know if you can pull the pipe through.
Mm-hmm.
If you spend the money and you can't pull it through, now we're going to start over. We're $28,000 more than before.
And there is some nuances that might be different. You'll help me with this, Mike, is that pulling a liner through it is probably going to be simpler than digging. Less risk, is that true? Because as you start to dig, you find other problems that surface.
No, we feel pretty confident that the horizontal directional drilling will be successful without any, because we already called in what's called the USA. We see the orange and green paint on the ground, so we know where all the utilities are. But you're right, the option one risk is that we could spend $28,000 and find that we cannot seal the existing pipe good enough to then put the liner in and make the liner cure properly. Then we're back to square one. We've already spent the $28,000 and we gotta spend $253,000 again as well to do underneath with the horizontal directional drilling.
Okay, I have no problem. I think one or two is the right way to go.
No, if we went the permit, if we went the long route with the wait for the permit and everything, Justin's recommending we do a 12-inch pipe instead of an 8,
yeah.
And the cost differential is not very much.
Then that would, and you said higher capacity, I was wondering why. So
right.
Okay.
Yes.
It makes a big difference then if you go.
Yeah, 12. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're doing it, you might as well do it with a large.
Sure.
So we'll go ahead and bring this before the board tonight.
Sure.
We're looking for authorization to move forward with either option one or option two.
Okay.
And start the process, create a project budget, and begin the process.
All right, with that, we're going to move on to item E3, discussion regarding the scope of work for water, wastewater, streets.
I'll turn this over to Dina.
Yeah, so we're going to be looking at hiring Vahovic and Singh, municipal consultants, to do our water and wastewater rate study. The scope of work is before you, and it's not to exceed $25,000.
Is this the firm we used before?
Okay, so we have not used the firm before, but Allison, who used to work for Barta Wells, this is her firm. So she transferred. So why we're able to keep the rate fairly low is because she has our spreadsheets and things she's going to plug and play it for us.
And
so
Allison is the one that gave us that quick turnaround.
Yes.
On
yes.
The bond.
Yes. Yes. So she came to present to you, I think, was it last month? Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm going to bring this to the board, and any questions?
I have no
questions. No questions?
No
questions? Okay.
Okay, and with that, we're going to go to E4, discussion regarding the wastewater master plan and costs.
Gregory?
Okay, so in the board packet, you got a copy of the wastewater master plan. This is the final draft of the plan, pending comment from the board or something, you don't want something changed. There's minor editing going on behind the scenes that I'm working with Stan Tech on, but that's just minor editing things. In the board packet, I wrote a staff report that outlines sort of, you know, this, we've been talking about this for a while, so just to sort of reiterate the purpose of the master plan. We had real three questions. What is the best way to achieve recently adopted permit limits for denitrification? What should the town do with Plant 1? And because of the drought and water conservation, is there any water savings or any energy savings, any cost savings if we, you know, reevaluate how the plant should look as part of the master plan? Those are the three big picture questions. There's some minor stuff that carried on through there, but these are the three big questions that came along. The plan addresses those. The most cost-effective way to achieve the denitrification limit in the new permit is the construction of three anoxic basins in front of all three oxidation ditches. That's the lowest operating cost as well. And then plant number one is still needed by the town for maintenance and reliability reasons. Occasionally during peak loadings in the middle of winter is our conclusion on plant one. And then as far as we prepare plant number one versus moving it to plant number two, so the decision was made to stick with repairing plant number one. So those are the three big picture items in the master plan. And then the flows have gone down at the plant. That is true, but it turns out the biological loading has not really changed much. And so what looked like a gain on one end wasn't really a gain, just something different occurred in terms of biological load. So the plant treats biological load, to organic load, that's what it treats. And so that its purpose is a little different. It usually tracks flows, but when the conservation came, the flows went down, but the biological load didn't change. People still lived here, people still eat the same stuff they eat. So those are the major conclusions from the plan, and then the plan put forth all the costs for the different elements of the projects. Most of them are associated, the majority of the costs are associated with the identification project. And we've got two budgets for you. One is the overall project breakdown, and one is the actual specific costs for the projects. So there's been a budget established for the project. I'd like to go to this sheet here first, just kind of show what it is. So, this table's gone around, I think, before, but these are project costs. So people have asked us before, well, what does the project cost entail? What does it mean? So it means that there's a variety of costs involved. So for the project, this is what we're carrying for our project costs for the proposed projects under the master plan. These are what are called the essential projects under the master plan. It isn't every project that you can conceive of in the master plan, it's the essential project list out of the master plan. The things that we think you have to do as a minimum to be where the direction is given about reliability, redundancy, and discovery bay. So the first thing is that the bottom line is 13.386 million. I think you've seen that number before at the board, but not knowing what it was made up of. And so this table is sort of breaking down what that, more formally, what that number is made up of. Okay? And so we've already authorized the GTEC, the board actually already authorized that, and the GTEC has been proceeding on the project. CEQA permitting is going to take place in-house, but there's a little cost to that. Surveying will need to take place. There's a rate study that Dina's talking, I think it's 25 for the rate study,
yes,
that Dina's talking about. Influence sample testing is an ongoing thing that's recommended in the master plan. There's an oxygen study recommended in the master plan. There's the design. There's going to be administrative to staff costs. I don't know how you build it, but this is for like handling invoices and just the general kind of work associated with that. There's going to be internal project management costs, which is going to be Mike. That's number nine. So we need a discovery bay project manager. That would be Mike. They'll be interacting with me and the construction team and stuff like that during the project. There's a construction management, engineering support, and inspection that occurs on the project. And then there's geotechnical inspection during the construction. Those costs total out about $2 million. The master plan construction cost is at 10.5, and then we're carrying a project contingency of about $875,000 over and above those costs to get to our total project cost. So at the moment, if you authorize Dina, she's going on 13,386, right? So Dina's heading out at 13,386 right now, unless someone jumps in and says something different.
What's the percentage of contingency?
The project contingency is 8 points, so about 9,900,000 out of 13 is probably around 7%.
I put a dumb math, but yeah.
Okay. You're checking though. Make sure I get that right.
6.5.
Gone around the
So that's how the project costs are broken down on the master plan, and this is the list. The next sheet is this is the list of what we're actually doing. This is what we're doing. Now, this is a summary table out of the master plan, and if you look, that's important. Is there's three categories in the table. One's called essential, one's non-essential, and then one is unlikely. Okay, I wanted to take a brief minute to walk you guys. This is really the nuts and bolts of the master plan. All boils down to this, right? So the first project you see is project number one up here, and that project. gonna see a lot of plant one improvements, that these are all broken out. Actually, no, we jumped ahead. So supplemental aeration and oxidation ditches. There's a concern in the master plan that we're a little short on oxygen. So we're gonna do an oxygen study. We're gonna do a test. So that 800,000 there may or may not be needed. So we're gonna do a test first to find out if we really need to spend that money. And then you see, we've got UV disinfection testing and improvement. We brought that before, that there's a little work at the UV facility that needs to take place. The effluent diffuser in Old River is mentioned in the master plan. We include the cost here, but that's a CIP item. That number 500 is already in the CIP. So they have a little footnote. They took it out. It's essential. We need to make sure it gets done, but they took it out of just so the math would be easier for everybody. They pulled out the 500,000 by footnote E there at the bottom. So it's listed under essential, but it's not included in the math at the bottom because it's a separate CIP. Salt town improvements have are considered non-essential. There's some improvements over there that should be done. And then essentially we escape it, and then we jump into plant one. So then it's oxidation ditch structural rehab, clarifier structural rehab, clarifier mechanism replacement and upgrade, MCCC replacement. So these are the critical projects that were identified at plant one, which is most of 9 through 23, are all little improvements, little miscellaneous maintenance improvements over there at plant one. If you call plant one by itself, it's around $4 million for these improvements. Then the oxidation ditch was 8, that's 12, and then you really got like $1 million, you know, a little bit else floating around. And then at plant two, we have a decamp pump station. We've got some piping improvements there, clarifier and laundry covers. And we've got a little flexibility there because the cost includes both plant one and plant two. We may just put those at plant two. If we're really not using plant one a lot, we may just put those up. So we may have a little flexibility there. And then the water filling station was an ask, but that's pretty pricey, so we put that as non-essential. The extension of the golf course, a reclaim line to golf course 726 was something Virgil asked for, but it's pretty expensive, and no one wants to reclaim water right now anyway.
Well, so, how did that come about, the water filling station for reclaim?
Virgil asked what it would cost to drag a pipeline up to the golf course.
Okay.
And he just wanted to know what it would cost, so he just asked to put it in the plan. So that comes out at 1.3, but without a big driver, you know, you wouldn't spend the money. But we did want to know the answer. So
yeah,
the point.
Yeah, I think that was
And then water filling station, same thing. They use a hydrant now, and I wouldn't spend $200,000 to put in one of those. So, you know, you got a hydrant to take care of it. And then there's some collection system pump station improvements, some coating and things like that are recommended. And then item 29 is, we didn't talk about it before, but it's been carried around for every master plans. If for some reason the NPDES permit gets even more and more and more, you know, restrictive, at some point you guys are putting in all the technology. There's nothing left to put in other than reverse osmosis. Reverse osmosis makes the drinking water, right? So they have that as unlikely. It's $20 million, you know.
$20 million.
Yeah, so all these numbers are in thousands, okay? All these numbers are in thousands. So I got Mike on that one the other day, too. He's like, it's only $20,000. No, no, I'm not sure that's all. But, so anyway, the key elements here are, we're reviewing this information with you now. The plan is in 2 weeks, if it passes this committee, we're bringing this exact information to the board in 2 weeks and looking for a vote to say yes, proceed. And that's basically what we're looking for.
And then at that point, this changes from draft.
And then that will go to final.
Final.
That's right. Yeah, so we're going to leave this draft until, and I mean, you guys come back and say, go study something some more, right? Maybe then, okay, we have to cover whatever it is, you know, in the master plan. So that's in terms of cost. I have a detailed schedule also to go through, but if you want, before we can schedule,
on the
any questions on the cost before you schedule?
I have a question.
All right.
So, when we brought this in September, there was 25% contingency.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
now we're at 6.5. All right.
So there is still contingency. There is still some contingency in the construction contingency. Okay. So there's two kinds of contingency. One is, what do we estimate something will cost to build? And then what do we think it'll take to execute the project? Okay. And then, so there is still contingency in the construction dollars. There's still some estimated contingency in the master plan. If you look back, where is 7.8? If you look at the number for 7.88, where does that come through? There's also project contingency with built on top of that. So as it washes out, this is our project contingency. There's still some contingency left on this. It's not 25%.
or about 20%.
Yes.
My number, your number was right, it's 8.338.
Oh.
I took it off the total project.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then reading the table here, what's important is you want the 13.068 here to kind of line up with the 13.386 that we got down here. That's the number we're going after, the essential projects list, and we're not picking up some of these other miscellaneous projects at this time. You know, some of those are CPA CIP already, some of those are miscellaneous already in budget, and we take care of those. So those are the, so what is the official list of projects, like, what are we going to design? This is it. This is it. That's what we're going to design. This is what we're going to take care of on the essential list.
Okay, so this is the current estimated cost for the project. That don't mean when it goes out for bid, it could be higher or lower.
It could be higher or lower, right? Yeah. And while we're doing the project, we'll be looking for ways to save money here for a few things. I mean, we'll have meetings with Mike and Bernie and discuss about what. And one of the things that came up is we need to clarify our covers at plan one, right? We don't want to plan a lot.
So then it goes out initial value.
Yeah, there'll be, you know, but it isn't going to be $1 million of value engineering, right? We'll save a few hundred thousand here and there or some things like that. But the project's not an $8 million project. It's, you know, it's 10 and a half million construction is where we think it is legitimate. I'm worried about it. Right.
Okay, the one thing was, in the back of my mind, we're doing this to get our permit, and we have to get the permit, but we have to get the permit because we need to do denitrification. Like part of this project, is that permit addressed in here, is that a separate issue altogether?
So
where I was going with that is the nitrogen level that we're going to try and get the state say,
right.
Hey, you got it, it's too low, we're not
right.
Treating
so
it fair. Is that in here?
It is in here, and so if you want to turn to page 1123, I'll show you a little example. 1123. 7.23. Right there.
That's one.
Look at Bill. He's like, bam.
One of the sticking points for it.
So, what I was explaining to Mike just before you guys walked in is this is the mathematical model of how the plant should perform for removing ammonia. There's two things we have. We have two limits. We talk a lot about nitrogen, total nitrogen, N10. They also put a new ammonia limit on us also. And that new ammonia limit went from 25 to 0.7.
Oh, that's the one.
Right. So what's tricky about that is the plant's a biological plant, and we have to balance denitrification with nitrification. So we have to balance this process, and we can't push it all to one side. And so this is the mathematical model of how the plant will perform removing ammonia. And our limit is 0.7. And what you see is, on average, we're showing it works. But we're bumping the line every day. We're bumping the line every day. And we could not find their basis of 0.7. We've been arguing forever that 0.7 is too low. It's lower than anybody else around us. And your math doesn't add up. Every time we try and calculate this, we come up with a different number than you. So that NPDES discussion, they designed the plant to meet 0.7. Right? I mean, they basically said, you know, meet your process, it meets your permit, there's no guarantee the permit will change. And they're basically saying it does, it meets your permit. But it's right at the edge, and we don't want to be running right at the edge of the plant. We want a little fishing, you know, taking out the pipelines. So we're going up to the regional board tomorrow to argue this. Mm-hmm. And the regional board has already given us a concession to 0.8 from 0.7, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you look at the graph, 0.8 is a whole other line up, right? You know, on the graph, it's a whole other line up. And I've got a pretty good argument that it should be 1. So we're going to go up tomorrow and hash that out with them.
Hey, clue me in. I thought the board voted that if need be, board members would go out with you to put
different
a
meeting. Different meeting.
Different meeting. Oh,
yeah, that's
okay. This is
right, a private meeting. It's okay. Clear there. This is a private meeting with staff.
Yes.
This is where something might actually happen.
Staff to staff behind us.
Right.
All
yeah.
Right. Where you
we go up to the meeting when they adopt it.
All right.
The train's left the station.
Right.
Right. So
right.
We're going up to. It was nice because traditionally they haven't done this. Like once the because the permit's out public right now, once the permit's in public, they haven't done it. But they've already in the email to us kind of conceded that maybe that 0.7 is not the right number. So we're gonna go up there and see what we can get out.
So Bernie, I and Gregory will be able to crack it down in that
Sacramento.
Sacramento.
Rancho
yeah.
Cordova.
basically trying to take risk off the town and off the operations.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make sense that a small facility as we are is stuck with the highest requirement and we have less funds than
anybody. Well, all others would be modeled after us, right?
Well, yeah, the real thing is their math is kind of hunky in the way they came up with it, and we're just kind of saying,
show us your math.
Yeah, and you know, we're kind of saying we don't think so.
We're in the forefront right now.
Looks like they took the nominal and used it.
Yes, they took the worst value. They took one value that we had in 3 years and said, okay, they treated like that happens all the time, and this is your new permit. And it's like, if you took the second value in 3 years, the second highest, it'd be 1.2. So they're really hammering us.
Well,
one piece of data.
What is our real average?
Right now, we are about 0.1 right now. But the whole process is biased all to one side. It's like it only has to do ammonia.
No, the value that they use, you said that you
think that
it works.
The permit right now is 0.7.
Are they using
the
pH?
The pH.
Of 8.4. And we usually run in the upper 7, right? 7.8, 7.9. But we have one of 8.4, and that's the one they were using to give us
all. Give us all these numbers.
Yeah. So all these numbers are based on one number of 8.4 on the pH.
One time.
And they took a 3 year period, and that's the one number they picked up, a 3 year period.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So we're hoping to argue that that's crazy. We'll see if we can.
That would be realistic.
So I think that coupled with nobody else has a permit limit this low.
Yeah.
So the last thing is schedule. So that's this one. So in the staff report, we had a table schedule, but we thought we'd do a little more detailed schedule and just kind of point out some important things. So at the top of the schedule in the green, there is stuff that has to sort of kind of get going before you can really get going. You know, so we got environmental documentation, we got a rate study, we got some inflammable sampling, testing, oxygenation study, we got some surveying. Those are all critical elements to get resolved early so that the rest of the project can proceed. In the meantime, the pink is designed, and we're assuming that the plan right now on design is we're going to bring this to board action in 2 weeks to approve the plan and approve the project. And then if that happens, the following 2 weeks, we'll bring back the contract to start design. Okay. So with that being happened, the board approval to start design would occur in December, not November. And so we're saying design realistically can't really start till January. And we're looking forward to that.
Why can't we do two things at once? In other words, we know we're going to do the project. At this particular point, the only delay is, well, we don't have money, don't have funding, there's a disagreement on the board, which I highly doubt likely. Put the second, the design to proceed as another agenda item, and if for whatever reason this didn't pass, just pull that off. And I have to wait 2 weeks to come back.
That's fine. I just did whichever you guys had.
What do you want to get going? Let's get going.
I agree. So right now we had to start in January. Okay. Now what the importance of that is, we have a detailed construction schedule, what's getting built, and then we show plant one's going to come online first, and then we start on plant two, and we got to build the MTC. But the big thing is the bottom line here, right now here at the bottom, very bottom line is this is our date, December 31st. Our permit changes. Blacktop at the very bottom. And what you have is we have 6 months, Bernie wanted at least 6 months of operating time with the new plant before our permit would be changed so that we were ready for that permit change. Because last time we waited too long and we got caught. As you can see, even with the schedule, I mean, all laid out, we're there right now. I mean, we got to start, you know.
That's not going to move.
This date doesn't move. Anything that happens now, you're just reducing the amount of time Bernie has to try and run the facility before the permit hits, you know. And as you can see, when we did the filters, everything looked fine for a month. It took us a while to discover problems. We resolved those and everything went great now, but it's just, you know, when you run a new process, it isn't all obvious right up front what's gonna happen to you, you know, kind of thing. So anyway, that is the schedule. And this is the information we're gonna present in 2 weeks.
Question degree.
I must say, you were stalled to be doing
I gotta get it off my chest.
Okay, so then for 2 weeks from now, we'll bring this information and for approval, and then we'll bring the design contract with it and send it back.
Is there anything else?
Well, the only contingency, I'd like to look at this as a total package, so that's the reason I asked the contingency. Yes. So thank you for following up on that. I would like to see the total contingency, because we threw numbers around 20%, 15%, 20, 25, 35, and now we're aware. We don't know because we split it up.
Yeah, we split it up. Yeah,
let's return and report to the meeting and we see what the total contingency is and how we're going to use it. How we're doing it.
You could present that, unless it takes 2 minutes, you can present it.
Yeah, I can do it myself. So show
total contingency
and where they are.
I mean, it's nice, you'll know where they all are, but as a package, we're just seeing how we're doing it.
Yeah, it'd be nice to track what we thought it was going to cost exactly.
Okay.
Good report, thank you.
There it is.
Okay.
Okay, that's everything, Greg?
Yep.
Okay. All right, with that, Director Manager, do you have any future agenda items you'd like to see?
No, I think we've had enough in the last